It's me thanking you for not telling any embarrassing stories about Dr. Pope on a home-based podcast. I really appreciate that.
Oh, man.
No, that was not a cue for you to do that. We got to go teach a class.
We got to teach class. I'll tell your class that.
No, don't tell my class.
Because I got a good one.
No, come on.
I got
now.
A good
we'll
one.
See, I knew I shouldn't even say that.
I got it.
Welcome to the Home Base Podcast, the podcast where we explore the keys to college success and personal growth. I'm your host, Dr. Ricky Pope, and today we're deep diving into how students can survive and thrive in their college journey. For this first series, we're collaborating with the Young Men of Color Alliance, an organization committed to supporting young men of color through mentorship and community initiatives. Today's episode will focus on giving you the tools and strategies to take control of your academic experience. We will discuss the importance of developing agency and the power to make choices, shape your future, and overcome obstacles. Welcome to the Home Base Podcast. All right, welcome back to the Home Base Podcast. Today I have some special guests. I'll let everyone introduce themselves. So I'm your host, Dr. Ricky Pope, here at the Home Base Podcast, and we have Nick Martin.
Hi, everyone. I'm Nick Martin, a grad assistant for the Home Base Lab here at SDSU, and current grad student for the CBB program.
How you guys doing? My name is Karim Plasencia. I'm a second year criminal justice major, and I'm happy to be here.
And then we have my Uncle Eddie. Go ahead and introduce yourself, Uncle Ed.
Okay, my name is Uncle Eddie. I'm here visiting Ricky and the family at the school.
All right. So today we're just having a good conversation and getting to know the fall semester, what's going on in the fall semester, and welcoming students back. And this is Kareem's first time with us. And, yeah, we just want to know, like, what is it like to be a student at SDSU? Nick, how are you doing in your grad program? So let's just catch up and see how folks are doing.
Where do I start? The grad program is a 2-year program, only runs every 2 years. And I feel like the last maybe year and some change, a lot of things have happened in my life, a lot of change. I was telling someone the other day, like, since I moved out of my dad's house, I haven't been in one place for more than 5 months. So I've been moving a lot while also unearthing a lot of my upbringing, what I've learned growing up. The program definitely challenges my understanding of self, which is really good because I'm able to really understand who I am authentically. So it's been a journey. I know that sounds kind of vague, but that's what I've been thinking about. So like when people ask me how I am, it's like if I give a real genuine answer, I'm still trying to make sense of like the last year because so much has happened. Good and bad, and the gray area. I feel like I'm doing really well. I'm working a lot harder this semester, and I feel like I'm keeping up a lot better than I did last year, which is good. I was known for like procrastinating a lot last year, and so pulling all-nighters and stuff is just something I can't even afford to do anymore, just for my own health. So definitely staying on track, staying ahead, turning in all my assignments like a day or two before the due date, all that. And then making sure I still make time for friends and my friends in the cohort, family, all that good stuff.
So really, really balancing like school, work, and family commitments.
To the best of my ability, yeah. Not easy because it's like I can't really juggle all at once. It's like sometimes I just have to like put something down for now and then pick it up later.
I agree. Kind of like how you mentioned, Nick, you have to put something on the back burner and kind of prioritize what's really important. Kind of give it like, you know, give that 80%, give the other things 20%, you know, something like that.
Yeah.
And it's something that you kind of, especially in college and like your early adult years, I'm sure you realize that, but it's kind of hard to adapt and kind of be like, dang, maybe I can't do it all, you know? Because it's very hard, and especially for, like, the ego, you know? Yeah. To be like, dang, maybe I can't handle all this, you know?
Yeah, that's real.
So, Kareem, you're in your second year?
Correct, yeah.
Okay. So what is it, like, why'd you choose SDSU? What has it been like for you here? What are some of the highlights?
I like to think of it as, like, an earned luxury because there's a lot of luxurious benefits and stuff like that, like a lot of things I'm blessed with. Mm-hmm. But at the end of the day, like, I deserve my spot here, you know, and I have to have that confidence and that, like, that motto so I don't back down and don't fall back. But it's honestly been great. I decided to stick with SDSU because I was born here, raised in TJ, so I was kind of crossing, and I always liked San Diego. And I decided that I wanted to be here for a few years, and, like, eventually, once I'm older, you know, maybe go another state, go another country for a little bit, but I decided that San Diego was, like, the staple for me.
Wow, so that means you're a commuter student?
Correct, yeah.
Okay, so what is that like to commute to campus? That's kind of a different experience than what we think about the typical college student. Roll out of bed, run into class, right? Yeah, no. Yeah, it's a little different.
They get up 10 minutes before class, I get up like an hour 30.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, it's okay. A gamble because sometimes I want to, like, you know, do clubs or any extracurricular activities, but it's kind of hard to because as something as simple as just a commute, but also having to balance a job, it's kind of hard, you know? So. Mm. I have to kind of, like Nick mentioned, put something on the back burner and prioritize myself. But it's kind of, it gets to a point where you notice that a little too late, once something's kind of like a domino has already fallen, you know? Mm-hmm. So it's like, oh, you have to have that awareness even more.
So it sounds like you're working.
Yeah.
Okay. So what kind of work are you doing?
I'm currently working at the Boys and Girls Club after school. Yeah.
So that means you're giving back to the kids trying to help. Mm-hmm. And Nick does stuff like that too.
Yeah.
And Uncle Ed, you do stuff like that.
Yeah. I used to work for the Boys and Girls, not the Boys and Girls Club, the YMCA.
Mm. YMCA.
Very similar.
Okay. I like to help young people. Yeah. So what's one thing that each of us has learned from working with young people trying to do that work of giving back? Let's start with Uncle Ed.
I don't know what I learned. It's a feeling that I get because I just feel that, you know, a lot of kids, especially kids of color, doesn't have their fathers or whatever, and you out there playing with them or whatever, it gives them the confidence and to say, you know, they have somebody, like, to talk to, because some people won't talk to them like they need to be talked to.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Some people don't think they deserve the respect that they're given.
Mm-hmm.
And so it makes them feel 10, 20 times better. Because when they see you, they be like, they run to you. I don't care if it's a boy or a girl, they run to you and they want to hug you. They want to be around you. Mm-hmm. And it's just that ultimate love that you're giving them, but they're giving you. They're doing more for you than you're doing for them. So that's why I like it.
There's a lot of affirmative head nods.
Yeah. It's kind of like, if I could backtrack on that, it's kind of like the whole thing about giving gifts is better than receiving gifts.
Mm.
Because that joy that you put on their face, you know, it means much more than anything else. And at the end of the day, kind of like how you mentioned, representation matters. So if they see somebody that can be successful, that looks like them, it'll, like, push them that much more. And that's kind of how I saw with you, Dr. Pope, because I saw you doing criminal justice. And the few times that we spoke, I was really, like, touched by your words, you know, and really meant a lot. So I was like, man, like, I'm giving it from a guy who I would want to be in 25 years, you know, like the model person. So, like, even me at almost 20 years old, I had the same feeling those kids have they run up on you when I saw you, because I was like, man, like, this guy, I mean, from what I saw, he's successful, you know, he had it figured out.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Yeah, just echoing what's been said, I think children just have a great way of connecting in a way that's genuine. Like, they know how to, like, not fake the funk. Like, what you see is what you're going to get. And I really, from some of the stuff I've learned, the way they ask questions, because there's no, there's no, like, derivative or
filter.
Or, yeah, exactly. They're not thinking about history from 50 years ago. They're just thinking about, like, the right now. Mm-hmm. And that literally, like, teaches me, like, wow, like, the way they ask certain questions helps to keep things relevant and real to our situations and how we can learn and not make the same mistakes, hopefully, right?
Mm.
Going down the line. So, yeah, kids are great.
Okay, so I'm curious if you could share some of your story with us, Uncle Ed. Like, how did you come to be on the planet, like, here and finding your way to the home base podcast? Who are you?
Who am I? That's a good question. Like I tell everybody, I'm just a kid. That's all I am. Growing up, my grandmother came to visit. When she came to visit, I didn't want to let her go. So she took me to Detroit with her. I spent like 5 years in Detroit. came back. When I came back from Detroit, I was like a little rougher than my sister and brothers because growing up in Detroit, it's a rough place to be. Mm-hmm. You see people get murdered in the street. My grandmother was nothing but love. Hugs, kisses, and that's me, hugs, kisses. I niece and nephew, I kiss on the forehead to this day. And it's okay, that's all good. But when I moved back to Birmingham and my father had cancer, so I think I got to spend like 3 more years with him. But in that time, he showed me how to treat your family, how to treat your mother, or your wife, rather. What a man, not the so-called man, but a true man is. A true man is taking care of his responsibilities, taking care of his family, looking out for his family, disciplining his family when needed. So he passed away, I think I was 12. Then my mom, she raised us, and she did a good job. You know, she's a single parent. Then I bounced around because I have
ADHD?
Yeah. So I had that working, I don't know, for me or against me. Mm-hmm. For me, I think it was working for me, but a lot of people think it's working against me. But I had that, so I'm bouncing off the wall or whatever. Can't hold down. So when I got through with high school, I entered college. I went to I started in culinary school. And then I wanted to be a baker. Mm-hmm. My mom, I have always cooked. My mom, she used to do a catering. I did a wedding cake for her, and she was like, man, where you learn how to do that at? I said, I don't know. It's just something I picked up. My grandmother used to bake cakes. I just picked it up from her. Then from there, I was in my second year, and my teacher, her name was Janie Green. I was working an apprenticeship. They closed down because the owner was doing drugs. So they closed it. Then I was working at an Italian restaurant. But I wanted to do something baking. So it was a place in Birmingham. It was a grocery store. They had just opened. They had a pastry chef in there. So I went and talked to him. He was like, oh, yeah, you just had your teacher call me, and you can start working for me. So I said, okay. So when I had her call, she said, I wouldn't be a good fit, and then sent a white girl to take my place. Mm. That I didn't know how to react. I quit school.
You quit?
Quit school. And then I never told my sister now. They just said, well, why you quit school? I said, it wasn't for me or whatever. Then I started cutting hair. And then I went to barber school. Then I went to cosmetology. Didn't like cosmetology. So I just stayed in the barbering field. Then I went reserve army. Because my mom wouldn't let me go active duty at first, so I went reserve. Then I went active maybe 4 years later. I went active duty. Did 11 years, got out. Then I started driving trucks. From driving trucks, that's what I still do today. And that's where I'm at right now.
What do you like about driving trucks?
The peace, the view, the view, the peace, it's nobody over you, the freedom. It's nobody over you trying to tell you, you need to do this, you need to do that. I don't like to be inside. Mm-hmm. I like to be outside. That's another problem reason why I joined the Army, because I was always outside. Mm-hmm. So, but in all that is, I get to, number one, each store I go to, which is my stores, I get to help them when they need something, even though that's not my job. My job is not to, you know, say, oh, you need this or you need that. I see a need. Then I say, hey, have you called the warehouse? Well, the warehouse said, we don't have this and we don't have that. I said, they got it. I said, it's sitting there. Hold on. And I called my boss. And I said, hey, mobile store need A, B, and C. Mm-hmm. And he'll say, I said, it's on the warehouse floor. I said, well, you know, you have to talk to such and such. I said, okay, I'll go talk to him. Well, we got a trailer out there from Gardendale. I said, well, you know, Gardendale trailers ain't no good. We done had two of them. Mm-hmm. There ain't none of them been no good. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Then he's like, I said, I can't have that right there. He said, okay. So he loaded up. I take it down there. Then about 2 weeks later, 2 weeks ago, the same guy, I went and told my boss, I said, hey, I need the Graceworks trailer. Let me have it. Well, I'm going to call Brett. Brett going to tell him. Going to give it to you. I said, okay. I'm telling him where it's going to go. I said, okay. So when I take it and get it down to Mississippi, I done found out Brent done said, the dumb truck driver trying to tell us where our supplies need to go. He need to mind his business. Mm. And he needs to just worry about driving that truck. And so Victor, who's over the coast, and he tells me where he wants his trailers. And he told me, I said, well, Victor, I'm going to tell you like this. I said, people going to always say something behind your back because they're scared to say it in your face. Mm-hmm. I said, but at the end of the day, did you get what you needed? He said, yeah. I said, that's all that counts to me. Giving you what you need and your stores need because they won't do it. So me in a nutshell, that's me.
Now, on the way over here, you asked me what was our theme for today. And I don't know. It seems like the theme just emerged. And I think the theme is something about coming of age and masculinity and kind of how do you respond to circumstances that arise? Like, how do you make choices as a man or as an emerging adult? And so as I think about Nick and Kareem sitting in front of me, I'm wondering, like, how do you make sense of being a young man on the planet and making choices and figuring out who you are and who you want to be?
Yeah, making choices. I think for me, at least just who I am personality-wise, I'm always trying to think of, like, what's best and how can I find the most optimal decision for a group of people, for family. And it's hard because it's like I can't really please everyone, like, ever, as much as I might try to. And also in that process of decision making, like making sure like I'm also taking care of myself, like when it comes to because my dad was asking me the other day, he was like, I think right before the semester started, he was like, so like, what's your plan like after graduating and stuff, right? And the way he asked me was in a way of like, he was really like kind about it. Like he didn't have any like ulterior motives with that question. He was just genuinely like curious. And like when he asked me that, I was like, wow, like he just wants me to be able to like choose what I want. Like he's not concerned if I leave the city, leave the state or what have you. Like, so then like I start thinking like, all right, jobs, what is something that will help me to like be able to find a place here in San Diego? Cause you know, it's expensive out here, right? Like, what can I do that is in the field or close enough to the field where I can get the hours for licensure so I can get my LPCC license and licensed practitioner, clinical counselor acronym. And then, like, what is something, like, you know, all these things that I'm thinking about, right? And still, like, I have family in mind and people I love in mind. It's just sometimes it's like I really got to like, especially at 27, it's like I'm thinking about like these decisions I do make are going to help set me up like 10, 20, 30, 40 years down the road. And so I feel the weight of my decisions more than I did 10 years ago, like at 17. Like I feel the weight so much more. So, yeah.
Yeah, I think it's pretty important how you mentioned about feeling like the aftermath of your decisions now than you did 10 years ago, because I even face that now. You know, my biggest problem in high school is not even the top 100 problems I face now, you know? Mm-hmm. And as far as the whole coming to age thing and masculinity, I feel like kind of like how Uncle Ed shared, my father's also a very important figure in my life, you know? So he has kind of guided me in what to do, but also something that he calls it what not to do, right? Something as simple as that, you know, learn from my mistakes, learn from my dumbness as a parent, quote unquote, because it's his first time living life as well. Mm-hmm. And I see the sacrifices that he makes, you know, waking up at 4:35 in the morning, cross from TJ over here, go work in Carlsbad, El Cajon, La Mesa. And I'm like, man, not only do I owe it to him, not even myself, owe it to him to make something of myself, but I see his life and I don't want that for myself. And he even says it himself, not in a way to shame himself or speak bad about himself, but he says that I can do much better. And when he says that, I'm like, man, like, not only does he want to see me succeed as a, like, because him as a father, but he also sees himself in me, you know, sees the luxuries that I have that he wasn't able to have, because sadly my grandpa passed away when he was about 12 years old, 11, and he had six siblings, right? And then TJ finishing middle school is like a big accomplishment, right? And sadly he was a middle school dropout. So he now faces a burden of like, dang, I have little to no education and now I'm struggling, you know? Luckily he was able to find a job good. He's an electrician, so he does pretty well for himself. And I see his, like the contrast in his upbringing when at 15 he was already more man than I am at 20 compared to myself. And I'm like, man, like, you know, if I don't do it for myself, I have to do it for him.
Mm. But I feel that when you say you're doing it more for him, and I respect that, but the drive that you have has got to be, for me, is like, I got to do it for myself. Because then I got to show people that, the boys that's coming after me, not just saying your brothers or anything, but any kid that sees you in your community, sees you and say, that's what I want to be. Because you got a lot of male influence that's selling dope, stealing, and they see the cars, the clothes, and all that. But at the end of the day, that's something that's going to lead you where you don't want to go.
Definitely.
So, like, how I feel is like, anytime I see a teenager, a young adult, or whatever, I'm always the first to speak. Always. Always. Mm. What you doing, young brother? How you doing, young king, or whatever? Even in, like, my neighbors, I got a lot of neighbors that's Mexican. And, you know, at first they didn't speak or whatever. I had to speak so they'll know, hey, he's okay. There's a lot of times people don't want to speak to each other. And then so at the end of the day, you can't learn about them and they can't learn about you. And that's all a part of being a man too, is like going up there, hey, how you doing?
Breaking the barrier.
Yeah, because at the end of the day, I don't know what you're going through culturally. You don't know what I'm going through culturally.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, we're both in the same spot where somebody's looking at us and they're not thinking that we're human. They're not thinking that we deserve. We're not worthy. Mm-hmm. But at the end of the day, everything that we do, everything that we have, and everything that we show, they get it from us. And they don't know that. In their head, they don't know that. In all the communities that comes together, feeds off each other's community. So at the end of the day, you got to stand up. And if you don't stand up, you'll fall for anything. But when you're doing your life, it's got to be because you want to do it.
Yeah,
I understand, like my grandmother, I want to be the best person. But just like I say about my dad, if I'm 1/4 of a man that he was, because again, he had to drop out of school when he was 6th grade. So he had to drop out because his father passed away. Mm-hmm. So he had to raise 6 other siblings. Mm-hmm. So I understand what you're saying. But at the end of the day, you got to do it because you want to make it. You want to make it.
Yeah.
Because dad has already lived his. And he's pushing you for it because that's what he wants. He wants the best for you, just like your dad. He wants the best for you. And a lot of times we look at our parents and we say, man, they could have did this, this, this. But it was no book on parenting. So I have to do the best thing I have to do to make sure you get where you go. You might not like the way I put it, present it, or frame it, But if I'm pushing you and telling you right from wrong, that means I care. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people forget that. Mm-hmm. Was that your father might not have been like, say, I love you or whatever. He showed it in action. The clothes that he tried to put on your back, the roof that he put over your head, the food he supplied, that's all love. The things he wouldn't let you do because he knew you might get in trouble. Mm-hmm. But see, people forget that. Everybody is so focused on, oh, they haven't said I love you. But they might not have been raised up in that environment. Mm-hmm. Like, my mama, my daddy, they were nowhere saying, oh, I love you. But they showed it with their action. Now, my grandmother, that's why I say I'm a huggy-lovey type. My grandmother, she hugged me, she loved me, and that's where I got from. None of my sisters are like that. Mm-hmm. I'm the only one. So my thing is, so when I talk to people, they feel it. And that's what I'm saying. It's just like, so when I look at it, I don't want to, like, how my mama had to struggle, whatever, or how I have to struggle. I don't want them to have to struggle. Go out there, live your life like it's a net under you. If you live your life like it's a net under you and try, and if that plan don't work, don't come with a plan A or plan B. If that plan don't work, go to something else. Because at the end of the day, you're going to find what fits you. Just like you saying how you, when you first got here, and it's all new. So that's why you struggle, because it's all new. You haven't got familiar with your surroundings. Once you get familiar with your surroundings, just like when he started here in Michigan, and you said, oh, but I said, you're not aware of your surroundings. Mm-hmm. So it's a little different.
And it was cold, too.
And it was cold.
It was real cold. Like, what is this snow stuff, man? Yeah.
So once you get...
I'm a SoCal kid.
Yeah, so when you get used to your surroundings, you can do better because you're soaking in, because now you know what to expect. Mm-hmm. At first, you didn't know what to expect. So you, I'm struggling. Then it came easier. And that's what I tell people about truck driving. Why you just... I'm looking 3 miles down the road. Mm-hmm. So if I'm in my car, I notice things quicker than you would in your car, because I'm used to driving every day and used to a situation. And that's what you're doing. Now that you're in your program, you didn't got used to the pace. Now all you're doing is soaking it in. So now, okay, it gets easier and easier.
So this is the last year of your program?
Yes, correct.
And so you're going to be a LPCC, a licensed professional clinical counselor. Mm-hmm. Okay. So what does that mean?
It means that I would be able to start my own private practice down the road if I want.
Okay.
And I think some rules have changed with who I can counsel. Apparently LPCCs can counsel couples now. I didn't know that. Mm-hmm. It used to be separate, like MFTs, marriage and family therapists, would only be able to like work with couples and families and stuff. But now I guess it's open for everyone.
That's a big market.
Yeah, for real. So being able to counsel and give therapy to all different kinds of folks would be great.
Now you're doing that work in your program now, like you're training. So a part of your training is sitting down with people and helping them. So how's that going for you?
I really enjoy it. I think the clients that I've been able to experience working with so far, all of them have come with their own different stories, but being able to find ways to connect with them, like just one way, has been like the best, regardless of age or their background or anything. And I think that's been one of the most rewarding parts of my job so far. And yeah, just all different walks of life. And, you know, you never know who you're going to meet. Like when you have a new client, like getting ready to do a new intake or anything. And I have a current client I'm working with who I've been working with since last semester. And being able to see how different they are compared to that first semester of meeting, like a lot has happened over the summer. So like I'm still, even though I have the advantage of like knowing who they are and knowing a lot of the family details, who they are now 6 months later is different. Mm-hmm. So definitely taking that person into account too.
And so now, so you're still training, but you're at a training clinic. So then how do you get clients? Like can anybody sign up to go to this clinic?
For this particular clinic, in particular, we're talking about the Center for Community Counseling, the D.D. Alford Center on El Cajon Boulevard, not too far from SDSU. So it's open to the public. Anyone can come. And
is it low cost?
It is low cost. They do it based on your income. And if you are a student at SDSU, you get six sessions for free. And my client, since they did their free six sessions last semester, we were able to restart it technically. And now they're getting six more sessions this semester for free.
So not only can students get free counseling at the D.D. Alford or the CCCE, but they can also contribute to your training.
Yes.
Okay. Okay.
Exactly. Okay. Because that is the thing. Even though we are still therapists in training, pre-licensed therapists in training, we're getting supervision from licensed therapists who have decades of experience, some of them. So they're in good hands. Like, there won't be, like, anything crazy happening would not happen because they would intervene right away. They're able to watch us in real time. And if there's any harm being done or if we're concerned about the health of the client, they will step in. I've seen it happen before. So, yeah.
Now, Kareem, you're doing criminal justice. Why'd you choose criminal justice as your major?
I felt for me it was kind of either that or bust. As far as, like, the mathematical, science, engineering side of things, I wasn't really intrigued to studying in higher education. But I felt like if I could do my part, leave my little grain of sand, you know, do something bigger than myself, I thought that would be, like, the most influential, in my opinion, and personally. And it would be, like, the best bet. So
he doesn't know that he's going to do CPP one day. He doesn't know yet.
Yeah, Dr. Yeah. Pope's first. Yeah. Growing up in, you know, TJ and seeing a lot of the violence and, like, the high crime rate and even, like, at 10 years old, reading, like, just being at the salon one day with my stepmom, looking at the newspaper and it's saying that we were deemed the most dangerous city to live in, in Mexico. I remember looking down at myself. I'm like, what? Like, you're like, and you don't realize, but just how bad things are until you see just how bad things are. And I actually had a question for Uncle Ed. You mentioned how you grew up in Detroit, right? And you also mentioned how, you know, with the fast life comes fast consequences, right?
But that's true.
Okay. Selling drugs and stuff like that. I'm curious because I'm sure you would agree that your peers can't say that you have lived the quality of life they have due to succumbing to those crimes and stuff like
that. True.
So how were you able to kind of navigate and manage stepping away from that side and not wanting to do that in a time where it was less stigmatized than it is today? And back then it was more so just a way of getting by.
My big brother, Philip, my Uncle Michael, my grandmother, it is like, even though it was around me, I wasn't a part of it. Like, when my grandmother moved from, we stayed in a house, and but I guess she got arthritis. I don't remember too much about the move, but she couldn't walk up and down the steps. But then when we moved into an apartment, it was a steps all the way. She said, "Well, when I get up here, I don't have to go back down." I said, "Oh, okay." But yeah, my brother always kept me doing something, or I was over at my cousin's house, or my grandmother kept me busy in the house with her doing stuff. I did have, like, the kids downstairs or whatever, but grandmother had to know where I'm at all time. Yeah. But no, we didn't, like if we played in the basement or something like that. Police used to come out. Firefighters used to come out and turn the hydrants on, and we played in there. Or the police would come, and they have roller skates that you put on your shoes and we roller skate. Yeah. But they was always vigilant. But my brother and sisters, my brother and my grandmother, they wouldn't let me be a part of nothing like that. No. Yeah.
They just didn't play that.
They didn't play that.
That's great.
And my brother,
get the switch off that tree, boy. What you doing out there?
And my brother was hood, you know. Yeah. Even coming from the South, and I was like, boy, you ain't hood. But my brother was. He was like, he was hood. And but you wouldn't mess with him. Well, nobody messed with him. But he wasn't a part of that life, but he was a part of that life at one point. But nah. If I try to do something, he'll pop me in my chest.
Yeah. And so, it really is something. Oh, I didn't mean to cut you off.
No, go ahead. You good.
It really is something as simple as a distraction. Like, I see it with these kids at the Boys and Girls Club. I believe, as corny and cheesy as it may sound, there's no such thing as a bad kid, right? Everything's nurtured. So when these kids are saying bad words or doing bad behavior, it's something as simple as a redirect, because what they want is the attention. They don't mean any malice with what they say. At the end of the day, if they cuss you out, they're just saying words. They don't mean any hate behind it. So it's something as simple as redirecting their attention and knowing that you're not a threat, but an ally, and giving them that nurture, that positive nurture that should have been instilled but can still be instilled now and have a great effect. And I see that a lot with especially the fifth and sixth graders, because they're at a weird age where it's like, I'm not a teenager yet, but I'm also not a little kid. And they're not a little kid. If you ask them, no, they're you know, yeah, they're a young adult already at 12 years old.
Yeah. They know everything.
Yeah, that's really good. That's something that reminds me of something my dad would say. Like, because he also works in education, and he says, I don't have bad kids. I just have kids who make bad choices.
Yeah.
So that sounds like a lot of like what you were describing. I think with children, like that whole age, like so much is happening, like kind of like our conversation earlier, like so much is happening, like developmentally, some students are like developmenting earlier than others. And it's just a lot of different stuff happening at one time. So like knowing how to take care of each child, like individually, like how, like not blanket, like, how do I say it? Not doing like a general approach to all the students, but like knowing each one's personality and being like, okay, I know this one is this type of kid. I know this one probably wouldn't like this activity as much, but I know that they'd enjoy this. Like, get to know their interests and all that kind of stuff. Really good.
Yeah, I think it's pretty great and crazy in a good way how Uncle Ed was younger in a time where mental health had a bigger stigma and wasn't accepted.
Yeah.
So for your family to put even that much more effort into making sure you're on the right path, like I mentioned, like I'm sure a lot of your peers couldn't say that. And it kind of reminds me of something as simple as a little under a month ago when the whole Canelo and Crawford fight happened. I watched a documentary that they posted for both Wright and Crawford. Grew up in Nebraska, multiple siblings in a pretty bad area. And his mom kind of like dedicated him to boxing. And it's like, man, like imagine if the mom hadn't given that much effort, or if he didn't want to because his friends were making money doing something wrong. We wouldn't have the best pound for pound boxer at the moment. You know, it's kind of crazy how the whole butterfly and domino effect happens. And how if you really put this much effort into one person, how great they can become, you know? And
that's, that's a thing. It's like when you see somebody, it's just like each of my niece and nephew, I know their likes, their dislikes. What I can say and what I shouldn't say to them. What's going to affect them one way, one's going to affect them another way. You know, because I love all my niece and nephew. I even got a niece and nephew that ain't my blood.
Well, I want you to tell me about Shamika Denise and so the work that she's doing in the schools, because I think that connects with our theme. And
okay,
so what's one highlight from that work?
One highlight is that I just feel that even though she's the administrator of the school, how the students all just gravitate to her anytime they see her. Miss Pope this. I mean, see? I'm thinking about your mom. Miss Blocker this, Miss Blocker that. Like, we went, took her daughter to the middle school that she went to because she's in high school now. And so she was trying to get the reaction between the teacher and her daughter. And all the kids in the gym just flooded Shamika saying, Mrs. Blocker, Mrs. Blocker. And she said, go sit down. No, we want to stay with you. And so she walked into the gym. The teacher got back control of the kids that's in the gym. They all got in their place. But it's just like, it's just phenomenal that one person can change the mood of a child just like that. And I told her, I said, you know, that reminds me when I used to work at Robinson Elementary when she was in the first grade, and I walk into the gym and they, all the kids say, Eddie, Eddie, Eddie. And I go through the gym just raising my hand and try to get to the other side. But it's a good feeling. But yeah, she's administrator over a elementary school, and this is like her 10th, 11th year, and she loves it. So. But yeah.
And then y'all got me voting on Facebook for something. What am I voting for on Facebook,
man? You vote?
I'm getting
these
messages. Double vote day. Like, what is this about?
So Sky is her daughter, and she plays basketball volleyball, and she runs track. And so it was like Russell Wilson's them. It was Russell Wilson them. Their campaign for fighting cancer, and so the person you're voting for is the athlete of the year. Mm-hmm. And so she was in that, and it's just like just a way of showing the student athlete, you know, that you know you're worth something.
We see. Wait, so go ahead and brag on your what is that? Your grandniece?
My grandniece. Well, I call her my granddaughter.
She's a three-sport athlete.
Three-sport athlete, smart.
3.75 GPA, is that what it is?
Smart.
Okay.
She's amazing. She got a little lip on her, you know, but she's a good person. She's, you know, she tries hard. Just like Ari, she tries hard. You know, she loves her sport. She didn't like basketball at first. She only did it because her father wanted her to play. And then she ended up liking it. So, but yeah, she's 14.
Okay.
She's a bowler.
Oh my goodness. A bowler. Okay. And then you have a sister that you're really proud of.
Yeah, she's great. Melody, she is an amazing artist. She draws different drawings in like anime style. And she also does stop motion as well, like digitally. And she also does gymnastics. So she competes on like a national level. I think she has a meet in Florida the beginning of next year, like at the Orlando complex, like sports complex.
And we just came from there.
Okay, then you know her. So she has that, and then she also has like a statewide meet that we'll be having in San Diego this time next year. So there's like a whole schedule. I got it sent from our mom, and so I gotta make sure I put it on the calendar so I don't miss nothing because I'm trying to make sure I'm there for her as much as I can be. Mm-hmm. But yeah, she's brilliant. She's wise beyond her years, and just like really loving and caring. Like the way she shows up for me, I mean, she's also 14. Like the way she shows up for me is like, what? I need to be doing this for you. I'm the older brother, you know?
So let me ask you a question. So when she draws her drawings, do you post them?
I don't really post nothing.
Okay. Because I was going to say that, like I follow a guy and he draws everything with a pencil and it looks so realistic. And every time he posted, I said, man, this is amazing. La la this and la la. So one day he just like, man, you act like you, he's like, what he said? He said, you act like you one of my relatives, the way you be hyping me up. I said, I just hype up anybody that I see good work, and your work is phenomenal, man. I said, you know, if you selling one, I'll buy one. But I was like, I'm just giving you your flowers, you know. And that's another thing, yeah. That's what I'm saying. If she does something and you post it or whatever, so she's like, he noticed.
Yeah. I have posted one video of her drawings, but I don't do it a lot because sometimes I'm just like, I don't know if I should, but maybe that hesitancy is just so like her stuff doesn't get like people take credit for something.
Right. I understand that too.
I think like for her, like I've been able to take her to a convention where she could get like feedback from other artists. And like really just like, cause you know me, I'm gonna always say it's good, right? Cause I'm her brother. Yeah. But I wanted someone else like who's an actual artist, who's professional, that makes their own work, produces their own comic books and stuff, to like look at her and be like, okay, like give her some feedback here and be like, wow, you're actually really good. So like for her to experience that, I think that was really great. Cause like she knew it was coming from somebody that actually does the work and isn't just being nice to her, just to be nice to her. Like they really gave her some solid feedback.
Yeah, that's what I tell my sister. Yeah. I say, you'll look at my work and say, oh man, that's phenomenal. And I say, you my sister, you're supposed to say that. And then she was like, then she calls somebody, what you think about this Florida? And they'll say, oh man, that's fire. And for me, I just feel like, okay, it's all right. It's good, but I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Kareem, who's a young person that inspires you?
I have my three younger sisters. I was telling Nick earlier how my oldest sister, she's in seventh grade right now, so she's 12 years old. And just yesterday, I was like walking towards the kitchen or something, and she kind of like bumped into me. I was like, dang, I felt like I got hit like by an NFL fullback. I was like, man, she moved me.
Yeah.
And I look at her, I'm like, man, she's not the little kid that Like my mom brought home, like, hey, we have a surprise. Guess what? I was like, okay, I got a new Lego set. I got something. And I was a sister.
Baby. Oh my goodness.
And I was like, geez, like she's already becoming a young lady. You know, she has her wants, she has her needs. Mm. And, you know, we're privileges, man. We don't think about all the puberty stuff like that that much. But to women, it's something completely different. And something way more difficult. Mm. So when I see her, I try to have a little more empathy. You know, I don't want to poke the bear. I don't want to set off anything that doesn't need to be set off. Mm-hmm. But she's a great kid. You know, she inspires me. They all do, because I want to be kind of like how Uncle Ed mentioned. I want to be the figure that they look up to and be like, you know what? Like, I can do this. Like, college is not this distant thing that I may or may not achieve. Like, you know, higher education is possible.
Well, you met me and Nick, so, and now you know Uncle Eddie, so we're going to be looking for you.
Yeah.
Yeah, so we
exactly.
got you.
Exactly, yeah. I can't leave even if I wanted to.
No, you can't. You're stuck with us.
Yeah. And what about you?
Oh, what about me? I would say my daughter, she's inspirational for me. So she plays soccer. So first game of the season, she hit a hat trick. And so I was like, okay, little girl, who do you think you are? And then they lost in the last 5 minutes of to, I guess, a 56-ranked team in the state. Mm-hmm. And then this last game, last weekend, she hit the game winner. It was 0-0. And then she put it in. So she has 4 goals this season so far. Damn. And she's doing her thing. So I'm really proud of her. And she goes to practice twice a week and just running up and down that field, man. So just keep running, girl. So, yeah it's cool. Mm-hmm.
And I think it's great that we kind of give them, like, the spotlight, because it's very easy to kind of, like how Uncle Ed mentioned, you know, that artist thinks that he gets treated too highly for his work, when at the end of the day, like, it's way more important to give flowers now than later, because you don't know how much one good comment can mean to a person, you know, that empathy that we lack as a society. Mm. Because I don't want to get too preachy, because I've only lived in Mexico, right? But I feel like here in the U.S., we're pretty closed off, which is surprising, because at the end of the day, we're still a melting pot. But kind of how he mentioned how the neighbors are kind of more reluctant, it's like, no, like, you know, we're a community, and I'm nothing without you. And I feel like when I was in TJ, everybody's like, oh, good morning, good afternoon, everything, like everybody. Mm-hmm. And when I came back, I was like, dang, these people are all rude. Like, nobody says hi. Mm-hmm. Nobody says anything. Yeah. And it's true, you know. And they don't see it as a bad thing, because, again, they don't mean any malice behind it. But it's like, why not give a little effort of saying, how are you doing? You know, like, just hear somebody's story, because you don't know where you're going to learn.
Yeah. Because everybody's in their own head and their own lives. Well, so when they're passing you, just like that young man, a truck was coming up.
Oh, and he was just texting.
Yeah. And blah, blah, blah. And I'm looking at the driver. He looking at me. We ain't saying a word to each other, but we both laughing at the same thing.
Yeah.
And he shook his head. He's like, and I was like, yeah.
The guy's just walking, student walking with his phone.
So everybody's walking around in their own world. Mm-hmm. But sometimes you need to look up and acknowledge the person, because you never know. That person you speak to, he's probably on his way to go.
So listen, we gotta get ready to go teach a class. So before we get out of here, what is the takeaway message? So I don't know who wants to go first. Final words. What do you want people to take away from this episode?
I would say a big takeaway is in order to love others, you do gotta love yourself, and make sure that you prioritize your health, all those things, because it does impact the love that you want to give to others, you know. So that would be my takeaway message.
I would say, for me, empathy, you know, something that we lack as a society, especially now. And these times are crazy, and I feel like I mentioned right now, you know, I'm nothing without you, and you're nothing without me. Mm-hmm. So I feel like as a society, we need to be more, have way more empathy with each other.
Mm-hmm. I guess my takeaway is pure love. Because if you never love yourself and never show love, then you're out of love. You don't have no love. And then you're living lost. So that's my takeaway. It's just that we need to love each other.
My takeaway is just me thanking you for not telling any embarrassing stories about Dr. Pope on a home based podcast. I really appreciate that.
Oh, man.
No, that was not a cue for you to do that. We got to go teach a class.
We got to teach a class. I'll tell your class that.
No, no, don't tell my class
that. Because I got a good one.
No, come on.
I got
now.
A good one.
See, I knew I shouldn't even say that.
I got a good one. Nah, but I do got a good one.
Oh, my goodness.
But I couldn't say it on here anyway.
Yeah, don't do that. The Homebase Podcast is a student success podcast recorded at the Digital Humanities Center at San Diego State University Library. Like, follow, subscribe. Find us on IG at SDSU_homebase.